The blind PDA wars are really hotting up now as Pulse Data International, on the eve of the CSUN conference in California, announces a new version of its Braille Note software to be released not long after CSUN and to be displayed at the conference. To tell us about that and to talk about the state of the blind PDA scene in general, we're joined by Pulse Data International's Larry Lewis. Larry, welcome back to the program. And new Braille Note software to talk about. What are you calling this one? Is this 4.5?
I believe the marketing decision and the development decision is we're going to call this 5.0 because we have some significant upgrades that we're going to be releasing in this software package. So we're going to, I think, per year aim to do two significant upgrades and build every two builds. We'll go 5.0, 5.5 towards the end of the year, and any subsequent patch releases would be 5.1, 5.2, and hopefully we won't need any more than one or two patch releases. But we are going to aim to have two a year and mark the beginning of each year with a new software build, or the first software build of each year with a significant step forward. So we're going to be jumping from 4.01 to 5.0 because we feel there's a significant enough advancements coming out that would warrant such a jump.
It sounds like the speed of development is increasing a bit. Are you devoting more resources to programming at the moment?
We're devoting more resources, but I think based on some of the exciting things that our competitors are doing in the marketplace, and I think it should be noted that we're in a situation now where we have three or four significant competitors on the note taker front. I think it's refocused our efforts, it's redoubled our efforts, and we were very resourceful, I thought, 3 years ago when we launched the Braille Note, and have since done a number of different things. But I think with the state of affairs now and all the good things that are coming out, it's a great time for a consumer right now because they have a number of excellent choices to choose from. We aim to keep our technology on the forefront of portable adaptive devices designed for persons who are blind. So we have reallocated, reshuffled, and are quite focused for a plan, a roadmap for this product line over the next 18 months.
And as part of that process, you've recently announced that you've introduced a software maintenance agreement system. How does that work?
It works very similar to those software maintenance plans which are implemented by other software developers. Two that come to mind would be Kurzweil Educational Systems and Freedom Scientific, in that we wanted to parallel the software maintenance scheme after what we consider to be a fairly decent industry standard, in that we offer a nominal fee to purchase a software maintenance agreement which would guarantee you two significant software enhancements or software builds. And mind you, this wouldn't involve any patch releases or bug fixes. And what this does for us is it renews our commitment as an organization and as a development, you know, a company that develops adaptive hardware and software for persons who are blind. It renews our focus to say, hey, we have a lot of paying customers out here who are investing in the future. We really need to focus on giving them something to walk away with for a good bargain. And so it really does that for us. And it also enables us to invest more resources and generate the appropriate revenues to develop these types of features. And I think it's worth noting, Jonathan, that when a feature is undertaken and a company decides to do something, there's quite a bit of money, revenue, time, and logistics spent in getting that done and actually bringing it to market. And it's a situation where we depend quite heavily on revenues and so forth, both from the sales of our products but also incremental revenue to give you the market what you need.
Are you confident that now that you've had the hardware upgrade that the Braille Note's underlying infrastructure is up to date enough, sound enough, for lots of new features to be rolled out? I noticed, for example, that there's still an old version of Windows CE running on there at the moment.
Yeah, and without really getting into a great deal of detail, we do plan in the wake of CSUN 2 to take a look at that, and they're fairly certain that where we're at now from a hardware perspective would give us the appropriate platform that we need to do some enhancements to our operating system and for some other features that we have planned to implement later this year. I'm not going to suggest that this hardware is where it needs to be for the next 18 months, 2 years, 3 years, because we're in a very static, dynamic industry. And you look at your PC, I bought a laptop, 12 months ago, and some would say it's obsolete to some degree based on the laptop I could buy today. So I don't want to suggest that by next year this time or in the next 15 to 18 months from now that there won't be any hardware modifications. But what I do want to suggest is that we've proven over the past 3 years, particularly with this hardware and software upgrade scheme, that we are committed to taking care of our install base. And we've accrued quite a significant install base over the past 3 years. And I don't feel that, I feel very confident that we'll be able to provide, if there are any future upgrade paths and so forth as it relates to our hardware, we'll be able to look after our customers. I think we've proven that now. As it relates to implementing KeyWeb and updating the hardware and doing some things that weren't really achievable 3 years ago, and I'm fairly confident we'll be able to continue that trend.
Since we're talking in the general at the moment, can I talk about the difference in product philosophies, particularly with one of the what I think will be a major competitor, and that is the PacMate. Of course, they don't have the Braille output version out yet, but I'm sure that they will. And I was quite intrigued to see that Jim Halliday released that article, I think it was called Not All CE Devices Are Created Equal, and it certainly created a lot of controversy to be perhaps quite as upfront as you guys were on the subject and taking the competitor head on. What do you see as the advantages of having what people are calling a closed system as opposed to having more of an open system with a screen reader on it?
Well, firstly, just to reiterate or to get into the article that was posted, we knew that that was a risky strategy to post such an article, and we went ahead and we did it anyway because we felt it would be appropriate to at least put the cards on the table, let everybody know, as combative as it may have seemed, let everybody know where Pulse Data is coming from with its product philosophy, and really outlining the differences between the approach that we're taking and the approach that our competitors have chosen to take. Firstly, I think it's a fair assessment to say, closed versus open system, and I'll get into that. Probably one of the things that will shake out in the wake of CSUN is I do think that although our product philosophy would really suggest that we have a very blind-friendly, user-friendly way of doing things, we're going to need to do a few things to make the system a bit more open. And I feel that that's a fair criticism of our product, in that we are going to need to allow for some ability for programmers to actually get into our product, develop third-party applications, and in situations where they need to access different software packages and so forth, have the necessary hooks and so forth to Keysoft and the Braille display and our speech engine and so forth to do the appropriate developing to give themselves the solutions that they need. So I want to recognize that as something that Pulse Data needs to do, and in the wake of CSUN, we'll be redefining our post-CSUN priorities. And we've talked a lot about a software development kit. I think that's very crucial, as is keeping our operating system and some other things a little bit more current. So I want to recognize that as something that we need to do. As for the approach that we've taken, the product philosophy that we've taken, we have always envisioned a portable data assistant or a portable digital assistant as being a productivity tool for an individual who is blind, and have created a system that we feel is allowing for compatibility to the mainstream, but not necessarily accessing a device in the same manner that you might access a PC or a pocket PC or whatever. We do feel that the Braille Note is not a replacement for a PC, and I've always stood by that claim. Really feel that the Braille Note, if anything, is a complement to the PC, and we're seeing that with ActiveSync and some of our visual display tools and so forth, and it will even become more apparent as we release KeySync, and we can discuss that momentarily. We really feel that providing a very blind-friendly, user-friendly access shell to an application, for instance, if you take KeyWeb, we're really using the latest that Windows CE has to offer with Internet Explorer for Windows CE. But we've created an access shell that feels really good for note-taker users and is quite intuitive and quite easy to use, while having Internet Explorer for CE underneath as the browsing engine. And I just, I mean, being a user of technology for many years, and I know you're the same way, to me, there's a lot of good stuff that's built into note-taking, your whole cording concepts, your whole navigational concepts, menus, and a lot of things that, that Blaze Engineering, Telesensory, Pulse Data, and other manufacturers have really done to create a very blind-friendly environment and bring it to the portable arena. We don't want to necessarily throw the baby out with the bathwater here. And it's an environment that makes sense to a person who is blind. I mean, when you can sit a rocket scientist next to a second grader and both people get the device and it's easy to use, we feel that we've achieved our end goal. And so I think that there's been quite a bit of hype and quite a bit of speculation about this whole open system concept. And I have a great deal of respect for what's going on with our competitors. I think they've done an excellent job developing certain things, and they obviously have their own approach and their own product philosophy. I make it a point whenever I go to a conference or whatever, I try to spend as much time as I can, as much time as the competitor will let me spend with a given product. And I feel, especially in a Braille input type situation, thinking in terms of a screen reader on a portable device just doesn't necessarily work for me. And I use a screen reader in a PC on a daily basis, and it's a necessary tool for me. But when I'm in that portable arena, and when I'm in a situation where I need to be quick, efficient, fast, and I need to produce results that are going to interact and mesh with the mainstream, I'm not necessarily needing to use a screen reader because it's the popular thing to do on a PC. I think you have to look at your platform, look at the tools at your disposal, and then respond in turn with what you're wanting to achieve. And I am thrilled that we have a competitor that is shipping a new product like this, because I think that the market will determine what's easiest, what's easier to use, what makes sense for them to use, what's more sluggish, what is less efficient, what is more efficient. And I think it'll shake out now that we've got this product shipping, this competitor shipping. And we couldn't, there were a few, we had a lot of affirmations and some controversy that came out with Jim's article. It was kind of an interesting 50-50 type split as to how people took it. There was the inference that Pulse Data is submitting such a post because they're afraid. And I can assure you that we're not afraid of any competitor in the market right now, and have some incredible things ahead in the near future, but also the distant future, where I can guarantee you that it wasn't a response, a knee-jerk reaction out of fear or anything. We feel that our point needed to be stated, and we feel that although some maybe thought it was a bit abrasive, we thought it was important to come out with a very bare-fisted approach as to the approach that we're taking.
On the flip side, though, for those for whom the computer is extensible, who want to push the envelope all the time, if they have a PacMate and they want audible capability to play audible books, they can have it today with the PacMate. If they want instant messaging, they can have it today by downloading off-the-shelf packages and installing them via PacMate onto the system. I mean, isn't that really the bottom line, that having access to all of these extra applications that sighted people are using today means that a blind person isn't dependent on the vendor of the adaptive product to determine what the priorities are?
But they are dependent on the vendor to a degree, Jonathan, because just because a piece of software is downloaded doesn't necessarily mean that it's usable. And I'm going to be very candid here. I think that you've seen a tremendous evolution with JAWS for Windows on the desktop PC over the past 5 years, from growing from a small organization with Henry Joyce starting out and so forth, and loads of time being thrown into scripts being developed and so forth for the PC application and so forth. And I think we're seeing JAWS for CE as again, really the guts and the heart and soul of the PacMate. Again, this is simply speculation, and I may be way off base, but just because a software package is downloaded or an application is downloaded doesn't necessarily mean that there exist scripts for that software application to work. And I think, again, you accentuate the differences. Our strength, we feel, is in developing user interface Freedom Scientific has a script writing machine in JAWS for Windows, and they've proven that on the in the desktop arena. It will, I'm sure they're feverishly working on as many scripts as they can for these types of portable devices, and then you have the priority of, well, what portable portable application do we script first? Microsoft Excel? I know that's on the current version right now, but what do we script first? What do we do first? What are people going to use first? So you still have that whole situation where priorities do exist, but you have a different way of achieving those priorities. And again, I think that the strength on that product would be that they have, I don't know if they have a script manager or documentation for individuals who are programmers to write scripts, and it's probably quite comparable to the, I don't mean to be speaking out of turn here, but I'm assuming that it's fairly comparable to the JFW desktop scripting process. But I think it's a situation where you just can't say, I think Freedom Scientific has done an excellent job of marketing this whole, you can download off-the-shelf applications. What happens when you download that application? What happens when you use it for the first time? How well does it work? How well doesn't it work? What needs to be done to make it work well? And I can remember a few JAWS versions ago trying to use PowerPoint. Well, yeah, I could install it on my PC and I could open it, but couldn't really use it too well until a couple of versions ago.
Yes, there's no doubt that just like any operating system, there will be applications that are better behaved than others. But, I mean, the fact still remains that on a well-behaved Windows application, for example, even if there are no scripts or set files, depending on the screen reader you're using, often you can download a package, explore the menu bar, and make it work. And certainly in the case of, say, the Audible Manager for playing Audible books, and in the case of the Real One Player, which plays real media files, it works out of the box without scripting. And, I mean, that's pretty compelling that you can install a package and have it go today without the need for any script at all.
Yep, and it has stimulated us to assess our current state of affairs as it relates to our short-term priorities. And one thing that we'll be discussing in the wake of CSUN will be what do we want to do about this as it relates to our software development kit. I think it's also important to note for the end user who wants access to something that just speaking from Pulse Data's perspective, when we provide that access, that open-ended access to tie the Braille display on our speech to third-party applications and so forth, we'll do so with the understanding that it will be a situation where users will need to have enough programming knowledge and receive the software development kits and run with this application. It's not going to be a situation where we're going to be providing technical assistance every step of the way with developing your application. So I think that there needs to be an understanding with any, I know Freedom Scientific does offer JAWS script classes and so forth, and maybe we'll provide some sort of introductory getting started type scenario for persons wanting the third-party software development kit and so forth. But it's a situation where a person needs to be an accomplished programmer to make this work on any venue. And I very candidly will say that, yes, it is very compelling. And I'm not going to banter about that because it is compelling that there are certain off-the-shelf applications that are going to work when you download them.
You would not envisage a time, though, I take it, where you would retain the Keysoft applications you're developing, but also add some sort of screen reader functionality within the Braille Note.
It's been up for discussion, and that's about as much as I can say about that. I think what I'm wanting to ascertain is, how is this going to shake out in the market? Is this, all of the marketing hype surrounding this being a really big deal, how is this going to shake out in the next 3 months? And I think it's something I'm going to personally keep my finger on the pulse of what the market is saying on the different listservs and so forth. As it relates to Pulse Data, I think probably a significant portion of what Pulse Data does is in the educational sector, where students and teachers are wanting to accomplish given tasks, and whether it be through a screen reader or whether it be on a note taker or whatever, we're very keen to give them the tasks, the ability to accomplish the tasks that they want in an educational as well as a vocational setting. So I think the market will tell, and I think the fact that we have a shipping model, a competitor with a shipping model, now we just need to see how it shakes out in the market.
Mm. All right. And version 5.0 then, which you're going to be showing at CSUN, can we talk about some of the additions that you're making in there?
Well, we have four major additions that we're going to be incorporating into KeySoft 5. And all four of them, we really, with any software build from this point forward, want to keep it very feature-driven and, in a sense, very theme-driven. And I think that it was a pretty monumental step forward for Pulse Data when we came out with the browser last September. There's a lot of speculation as to why it really took so long for us to come out with a browser when we've had a product on the market for 2.5 years. While it's something that we've always wanted to achieve with the Braille Note and so forth, we really didn't begin development on that until last February and showed that at March last year and actually had it shipping in September. So by the time you get the necessary paperwork done and funding approved and everything else, again, it's a fairly comprehensive project anytime you undertake a significant development effort. So in keeping with the whole theme of online access and browsing and interacting with the mainstream, we really come out with four major software enhancements that we'll be offering to our customers. The first and foremost would be the KeySync application, and KeySync would be our synchronization tool, which would allow us to share our planner, address list, and email messages with Microsoft Outlook and allow for that seamless synchronization of our planner or our diary, depending on what part of the world you're from, with Microsoft Outlook's calendar, which, despite scripting and set files and everything else, isn't the easiest to use. At least I haven't found it to be the most easiest to use. However, we've deemed that, based in doing some market research with different federal customers that we have and so forth, as being really a standard, and that doesn't mean that other database programs aren't used or other mail clients aren't used. But we want to start with Outlook and extend that onward into different mail clients. But we're going to start with Microsoft Outlook. There's a significant amount of rework that needs to be accomplished with our planner. And the upside of that is it's going to give us a planner that has a lot of the same types of capabilities as Microsoft Outlook. Reoccurring appointments is one of those things that keep coming up on our listserv as a priority and something that people would want. So we'll be doing some things with reoccurring appointments and actually showing synchronization, calendar synchronization between the Braille Note and the planner. And the advantage to that is not necessarily that I would use Microsoft Outlook on the other end. I mean, I might do that, but to be able to walk into work and to connect to a network and to share that information, my schedule and so forth, with sighted colleagues on the network using Microsoft Outlook for them to acquire information from them and vice versa. Having that real seamless information exchange back and forth between sighted and blind persons and not, you know, having that PDA type functionality that we're striving to achieve. We'll also be doing the same with synchronization of address books and copying all applicable fields with the contacts folder and Outlook and all of the things that you have access to as it relates to note, street address, and everything else. Copying that across to and from with our planner. And I think it's important that customers understand synchronization is a double-edged sword. It's a really great thing, but if you do delete things on one end, you are going to delete things on the other end. And so we envision that there's going to be a little bit of support involved with this whole synchronization process, and we want to build some safeguards in so that customers aren't inadvertently losing data and becoming very upset with us and the product and so forth. So we want to be very careful about that and keep it very simplistic with a lot of safeguards. We also will be allowing for email messages that are placed in a certain box to be synchronized back and forth between Outlook. And we'll be showing planner and address list next week and probably won't have email ready, but we're pretty excited about that. We'll be doing that through infrared serial as well as a network connection. So
right.
We'll be able to achieve that three ways.
That's significant because, especially with the email situation, if you're using Microsoft Outlook in your office as your primary email client, then you can go on the road and know that any changes you make, any emails you send or receive on the road will be synchronized when you get back. So that will certainly make taking the Braille Note on the road a lot easier.
Well, to make it great for even the staff at Pulse Data, the blind staff who use the product, because I use the Braille Note quite a bit for email on the road through my mobile phone quite a bit, and I keep things on the server, I copy things back to myself, and so it'll be really great when we have that synchronization ability. I'm really excited about the planner, being able to share where I'm going to be at and so forth with sighted colleagues and so forth, because that's a real, the planner is so great for me. It's something that I use on a daily basis, but being able to share that information is going to be truly just fantastic. So KeySync is really the first of the four things that we'll be showing. We're also, we're intending to show wireless 802.11b access next week. We need to do some things with a simulated server type situation, because we'll be in a hotel and do some different things like that, and doing a number of tests with different cards and so forth. But we're aiming to have 802.11b and this KeySoft 5 support for that.
Right.
The two things that I'd like to show today when it's appropriate to do so, the last two things would be the Bookshare interface, the Bookshare.org interface, and also MP3 file download support, and can get into those.
All right, well, should we talk about Bookshare? And Main Menu listeners will be familiar with that, because we've spoken to Jim in the past when Bookshare was getting started, but this is the service that's available that allows people to share freely book material that has been scanned, and volunteers tweak it and do their best to get rid of major errors. And it uses a kind of a proprietary encrypted format for distribution. And of course, the thing that's making a lot of noise is that at the moment, most of the content is only available to US residents, and you're offering support for that in version 5.
We are, and we've received very positive response to doing that, and the folks at Benetech have been incredible to work with. They're a great company and have a real commitment to bringing this refreshable Braille and synthesized speech access and books and that information exchange to persons who are blind. I think they do an excellent job with what they've done in a very short amount of time, and I have a great deal of respect for Jim and his staff. They've been real easy to work with, and it's been a pretty straightforward development process where we have taken their encrypted utility for unpacking books and ported it over to Windows CE, and once again put an access shell around it so that it's really seamless to an end user as to how it's using. And again, not necessarily concerned with how we get there, but the fact that we actually get there and it's quite easy to use. Have gotten a little bit of criticism from countries and customers outside of the U.S. who don't have that access yet. I know that the Bookshare announced they're working with O'Reilly and a series of technical books that publisher has made available, and that's been made worldwide. And I can tell you that I do know that Mr. Fruchterman and his staff and all the staff at Benetech with the Bookshare.org project is doing what they can to work with other countries and their copyright laws and publishers and so forth. And I will go out on a limb and probably get myself in a little bit of trouble, but say that it is really a situation where customers in these other countries need to do what was done in the U.S. with some of the consumer groups and the lobbying efforts and working with respective interest groups to get this brought to the forefront of their government stream of consciousness. And we're quite keen as an organization to work with any publisher in any country with this effort, and we're not intending to shut out any customer. But we are not going to stare a gift horse in the mouth. This is a really great thing for the U.S. and for all of the thousands of people in the U.S. who have Braille notes and want to have that portable online access to where they can just, don't even have to deal with a PC. They can bring their book and the Braille note and unpack it and successfully use it.
Well, I would suggest that the problem actually lies within the U.S. There are a number of countries that already have this kind of copyright exemption. In fact, some that had it before the United States did. New Zealand is one of those countries which had this law before the U.S. It seems that the issue is that special formats producers, including Bookshare, are interpreting the law in the US to mean that the copyright waiver only applies to people within the US and does not apply to export. So the fault actually lies with the US law, not with other countries.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's really quite concerning that American organizations continue to keep passing the buck on this. It's your law that's the problem if it's not facilitating the export of this material.
Right, and I knew I'd get myself in a little bit of hot water here, but that's a fair criticism. And, you know, it's a situation where Pulse Data can, you know, do what it can to be involved. But I think the groups and, you know, the ACB and NFB and the different organizations in the U.S. will obviously have to do what they can to right that situation.
And they're not. I mean, both organizations are not. They seem to be quite satisfied with the fact that it is going on in the U.S., so that's okay,
right.
And are not really taking a global view on this and saying that actually special format material is a scarce resource and all of us as blind people have an obligation to share that material as long as there are countries where copyright is being appropriately observed. Now, I don't know that either organization is lifting a finger to make progress on this.
Right. And that's a bit unfortunate, and I guess I'm not sure what Pulse Data can do to really remedy that outside of the U.S. And if there's anything that we can do, keen to take suggestions, and if there's something that we need to do with the consumer groups that we meet with as far as stimulating activity there, that might be the most appropriate way to go.
Despite the fact that, you know, that this feature is not going to be usable outside of the U.S., there is no discount, I understand, for all of those overseas customers who can't use the feature.
At this time, there is not.
What's the rationale behind that?
The rationale behind that is that if you offer a discount as it would relate to somebody not having a feature, then what would you do if an individual did not have a wireless router or wireless internet access? Would you be obliged to give them a discount for that? Would you be obliged to buy them a router? Would you be obliged to provide them a network card free of charge, a wireless network card? What about people who maybe are unemployed and do not use a laptop, or people who are unemployed and do use a laptop, who don't really necessarily care or have a need for synchronization? It comes down to a matter of logistics. There's always going to be, what about the person who buys the latest copy of Window Eyes or Jaws but doesn't have internet access? And the thrust of the feature enhancements are all web-based. What do you do then?
All of those examples relate to financial wherewithal. None of them relate, like the Bookshare example, to a situation where the U.S. law is barring people from other countries from using a feature. They are illegal. They are legally unable to access this feature. Isn't that the
right
difference?
Right. In speaking with Benetech, because in the wake of releasing this press release about Bookshare and speaking with Benetech about this, they're fairly confident that within the coming months there are going to be some avenues open. So I don't know if they're working with who they're working with. I'm not sure if it's with the U.S. publishers and the laws in this country, but they seem pretty confident that in Canada and some other places, there are going to be some doors open up.
So, right, okay.
I mean, that's probably not the answer you're wanting to hear, but that's the best one I can give you.
Well, actually, that's probably the answer that people do want to hear, that if, you know, if progress is being made, it could be very exciting for those people.
From what I understand, this O'Reilly step was just one step in a series of steps that, you know, I know that it's in Benetech's best interest to open this up as widely as possible, and it's in Pulse Data's interest to provide a vehicle for a person to achieve what they need to achieve using this service.
And it is a very exciting feature to have this world of books available. Are you able to sort of give us a demo of how it works in practice?
I can. It's going to be a bit awkward. I'm juggling a phone. I have my Braille note hooked up to my high-speed network in my office here, and I'll put speech on. Okay, so from the main menu, for those of you who have a Braille note, you'll be able to follow along.
Main menu.
We're going to press I for internet options, or for our internet, and we'll launch our internet connection. And I'm going to type www, or www, as the Braille note says. Bookshare.
Bookshare, period.
And let's make sure I spelled that right, and I didn't.
Org.
And we'll call my Larry Land service through my network. And we start to get our connection. And again, we're running some alpha software here, so the way the page refreshes might be a bit slow, but we'll get that tidied up in the initial release. should be opening the page.
Bookshare.org, bookshare.org.
Okay, so we have our bookshare.org, and for those of you who are familiar with the site, have all of the standard controls and links.
Skip to link content, help bar, privacy bar, contact us.
Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to go to login by pressing L.
Login.
And that will drop me to my login link. And so I'm going to press enter on login. And that will link us to our login screen.
Secure alert dialog.
And we get our security alert dialog.
You are able to view pages over a secure connection. Any information you make in the view screen will
not show the OK button. We could check that to not show it again, but I'll leave that alone for now. That's our security alert dialog box that pops up. And we'll be in our login screen, and what I'll do is I'll enter our username and our password. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to jump to my first input control relatively quickly.
Search, selection, text input. Start search button.
And I'm going past.
Email, text input.
And I'm going into our Pulse Data account, which it's already saved our email. Now, this is interesting, Jonathan, because I was able to jump through a lot of gibberish and a lot of searching with four keystrokes to our search field.
Right.
Or to our login screen. So we have our password.
Password, text input.
And our password, appropriately for Pulse Data, is free beer. So I'll just share that with everyone. But you don't have our email address, so you still can't use it. Yeah. So anyway, we'll put free beer in for the password.
Submit button.
And we'll go ahead and we'll press submit on our submit button.
Please.
And so hopefully if I typed free beer correctly, we should be okay. So that will load that up. And from here, let me just make sure that I've logged in okay.
Login to bookshare.org. Welcome, Robin Williams.
Okay. And we've got Robin, one of our developers, on this account, so I just welcomed him.
Not the Robin Williams.
Actually, he's our development manager, I should say.
Yeah.
So what I'll do now is I'm going to go through my links. We could search for books and do everything we want from here, but...
Privacy. Contact us. Bookshare.org homepage. Authentic site secure by SSL. Click new. By category.
I'm going to go to new.
Nope.
There's a new link, so we'll go to the new link to see what's new on books here, and I'll press enter.
Linking.
And I'll link to what's new.
Link.
And we'll take one of the new books and we'll download it. And the page, when it stops beeping, we should be opening. There
okay,
we go.
Our new book.
And so here's a list of our new books that we have.
Keep moving. Privacy.
I was looking at this earlier, so I'll take you to one that I would like.
The Last Man. Everything. Naked. David Sedaris. Childhood Cancer. Unachieved Other Men. Sleep Proven Son. Alice Afton Bunt. Middle Passages. Hannah Blackwood. The Last Move. Michael Lewin. The Complete Shorter Fiction of Virginia Woolf.
So The Complete Shorter Fiction of Virginia Woolf was the one I was looking for. So I'm going to press enter on that, and what it will do is it'll just download that. It'll open this up. And it will give me two formats by which I can download this. We have the DAISY format, and we also have the Braille format. At this stage, we just support the Braille format. My sense... So we have our book information. My sense with this is that the DAISY format is not going anywhere, and it's going to become one of the many standards or one of the main standards. And so we need to address that as a company as well. But at this stage, we're just going to use Braille.
Okay.
So we get information. And we're going to go to
Braille. Digital format.
There's our Braille digital format.
Linking.
And so I'll link to that. And what that'll do is this will put this in my downloads folder. For those of you who have Braille notes in the web browser, it'll put it in your downloads folder. We'll download it as a BKS file, or a .BKS file, which is a Bookshare encrypted file.
Right, and it's downloading now, right?
Oh,
it's done.
Yep, it's done. Okay, so what we'll do is we'll exit this, and we'll go to our book reader. I'm going to go to download.
List of folder, dictionaries, downloads. Book name, res enter for the underline, comp, underline, b1.bks.
And it just, the underline comp, underline 1. It's that book that we want. It's how it saved it as a title, .bks.
Mm-hmm.
It'll take you to what you last downloaded, and so we'll press enter.
destination drive or extracted bookshare file, red enter or flash disk.
And I'm going to put that in my flash disk. What it does is it extracts or unzips the book, and I'll put it on flash disk.
Destination folder name, red enter or my book.
And I'm going to put it in my books because that's the default folder for my book reader. I can put it anywhere I'd like, a storage card or wherever.
Password.
And I'll type our free beer password.
Free beer.
And so it will unpack that book. And it will give us an interesting question when it's done unpacking. It'll ask us if we want to
delete that downloaded Bookshare file.
So it'll ask if we want to delete that downloaded Bookshare file, and I'm going to just type yes because it'll free up space on our flash disk. So I'll type yes.
Yes, the underline, complete, underline, shorter, underline, fiction, underline, of, underline, Virginia, underline, will, underline, F1. Remove previous option.
I'm going to review these options. I'm going to say yes.
Yes, this is a Braille or text document.
And I'm going to let them know that this is a Braille document.
Language or this document, press enter or English.
For users with the multilingual software that allows you to access French, German, Italian, or Spanish, you could read books in your respective language by changing the book's language. We're going to say English because it's an English book. And we're going to go ahead and we'll open that. And what it will do is it will open up the Virginia book, unpacked book, as one file. And I tested this out earlier this morning, and it was about 600 and some odd Braille pages. And so we're at the top of the document.
The complete shorter fiction of one, Virginia Woolf. Notice is required for copyright work distributed in the United States under 17U.S.
And it gets us our copyright law first, and then it gets into the book.
Well, that's nice and transparent and seamless, isn't it?
Well, exactly. And, you know, Jonathan, there would be a different recipe that I would use if I were doing this on a PC. I would use different commands. I would use screen reader commands, and it's not a right or a wrong way. I would be able to save that to where I wanted to save it, and I would be able to use the appropriate methodologies to achieve the same thing. We feel that a transparent note-taker, easy-to-use way to achieve things is really accentuates our whole product philosophy. Behind the Braille note.
My understanding from those who have used Bookshare is that although there is some encryption going on, that underlying it all, those Bookshare files are zipped. So does that mean you're a hair's breadth away from giving us an unzip utility?
It is a definite something that we're looking at doing, and we've achieved this pretty easily with the... It won't be by CSUN, but it is something that we can take a look at. I know that those of us who use Microsoft Outlook and so forth are always zipping attachments because we have to and everything else. And it's a situation where we've made a step in the right direction, and it's something we're going to need to take a look at doing.
Very good. And now there is one more rather big one to show us.
There is. One thing that wasn't quite complete by the time we launched KeyWeb, but because we felt that there was enough interest in the browser and enough usage in the browser, and I know that you and I spent some time with the browser last year, we felt it was still quite good and something that was very useful. We went ahead and re-released the browser anyway back in September without it. We do have MP3 file download support now. In this initial release, audio streaming is not built in, and it's simply not built in because there's not time to do it in a manner that would be really seamless to where it would be really easy to package and deliver, but it is something that we're aware we need to do. What you're able to do now is download any type of a file from the Internet. If you're using a product such as Kurzweil or whatever and you want to scan a file and save it as an MP3 file, save it to an appropriate storage medium and have an MP3 player off of your main menu. I'm just going to get out of this.
Main menu.
What I'll do is I'll plug in, I have one of the 5-gig micro drives that I use between my laptop and my Braille note all the time. It's made by Toshiba, and we support Toshiba and IBM micro drives and so forth. This gives me 5 gigabytes, which is a whole lot of memory. So I'm going to put this card in. And if I go to my MP3 player, basically I'll preface what I'm going to do by saying that the underlying theme for us at CSUN this year is to really celebrate the Braille note's 3rd year of existence. And what better way to really celebrate something like that than to have a birthday party? So we're going to be throwing a real big, fun, exciting birthday bash Thursday evening for the Braille Note and a few hundred of our closest friends, and have some live entertainment that we'll have at the party. Jenny Emery from British Columbia, Vancouver, British Columbia, with Dolphin Music is going to be our entertainment for the evening, and she's quite an accomplished piano player and vocalist, and I want to just give you a bit of a sample of that by going to MP3 just by pressing M.
folder name, right enter or general.
And I'm going to move us to our storage device, our micro drive.
Right enter or flash disk.
I'll go to storage.
Storage part, folder name, right enter or none.
None. And this is a 2 meg file that was emailed to me.
File name.
And I was just able to save to my micro drive. And we have I Hear Music, and I'll press enter on that, and it'll launch our MP3 player. This is obviously coming through speakers, but it's quite good. And if you want to hear more, I can pause that, but if you want to hear more, you have to come to the party, and there'll be invitations distributed at the booth, and we'll have lots of fun giveaways and Braille Note birthday cakes with Braille Note models on each cake, and it'll be actually prints of Braille Note models. We're not going to stick models on cakes, actual units, but we'll actually have different cakes and food, and just a way to say thanks for the past 3 years for those who can make it to CSUN. We'll have lots of really fun giveaways and have 6 presentations at CSUN where we'll be accentuating all of these different types of technology that I've just shown you, plus more. We'll be getting into KeySync and some other things that we're doing that'll be ready by next week. We're also, for persons who are coming to CSUN and keeping in line with our whole birthday theme, the whole birthday theme is the birthday party where Paul Stata gives the gifts. And so we'll be doing a lot of giveaways at the party, but we're also going to be inviting people who come to our presentations to enter a grand prize drawing for a cruise for 2 for 4 nights out of Fort Lauderdale, Florida. So we'll basically send you on a 5-day, 4-night vacation, a bit of a holiday in early September, and we can be flexible on those dates for a lucky person who gets drawn for attending the sessions.
Now, very good. With the MP3 player, I realize the UI is probably still being developed, but how did you pause it? What's the interface like?
That's quite simple. It's backspace enter for pausing speech. We just transferred that over, and we'll have more buttons, and resume would be that same key, pause and resume.
Okay.
So I could just simply hit that key. And did I get out of that? No, there we go. And so I can pause that. I can exit that and could resume next time I dropped into my MP3 player. And, you know, music is fun and stuff, but, I mean, we really envisioned this for dealing with a lot of MP3 files through the scanning mechanism of Kurzweil and so forth, and being able to carry around scan text and listen to it in real speak and being able to have access. We have a very broad-based MP3 player right now. We'll be redefining that and making enhancements as it relates to audio streaming and dealing with different formats of books and so forth. We wanted to start very base-oriented with a very base MP3 player that gives you all the controls that you would have, pause, resume, stop, rewind, and so forth. Right now I just have pause, resume, and stop working, which when we initially launched this, we had a bit of a problem stopping, so we were constantly playing files. So I've made significant progress with that, and it's just a licensed MP3 DLLs that we've gotten that are CE compatible, and we've put our user interface around it.
Does the first version, or will the first version, allow you to build playlists of MP3 files?
We're trying to get that in. We think that we should be able to at least achieve a very simplistic type playlist, but I'm fairly certain that that's on the docket for being put in. But it won't. I don't think I'll have playlists by next week.
People hate these questions, but when are you hoping to have this out?
We are aiming towards the end of March to go into a public beta phase. We'll obviously have private beta first, but hopefully by April get into a public beta phase to offer a timed beta for all Keysoft 4 users. And the marketer and Larry would like to say in April. Development people would like to say at the end of May, so we'll probably compromise end of April, May 1st. And part of the problem is we need to have our secure download sites. Our SMA scheme is based on serial numbers for the Braille notes, so we're not really into authorization keys and stuff like that. I know we did that a little bit with our keynote multimedia speech and so forth in the past. What we want to do is make it very simplistic, and the individual who selects the download portion of the SMA, if they want to receive the ability to just download their file and install their new software, it'll be serialized to their unit. So their details will be all organized in New Zealand and through our respective companies. And, you know, if you have Braille Note serial number 14138, the software that you download will only install on that specific Braille Note. And this won't allow you to install it on other products. It won't give you the access and so forth.
That's Larry Lewis, who subsequent to the interview tells me that they have hit some glitches with implementing the wireless support, and it may be that it may not make it into this release. If it doesn't, and they certainly won't have it to display at CSUN, then they'll add some additional features that people have been asking for instead and come back to the wireless networking support.